Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to the Three Martini Lunch. Grab a stool next to Greg Corumbus of Radio America and Jim Garrity of National Review. Three Martini's coming up.
It's a learning process again here at the Three Martini Lunch. Glad you're with us. Your stool awaits. We have bad, crazy, and crazy martinis today. Jim, for a purpose other than Three Martini Lunch, I'm actually back in the office today. First time I'm in the studio since mid-March, and I've either forgotten how to do stuff or the stuff that used to work doesn't. So it's a bit of a scramble here. I was clearing out the bites from the last time we did the show from the office, and they were clips from Biden and Sanders at their debate, which was less than 3 months ago.
I'm sure if I looked at my notes for that day, Greg, I'd see, you know, economy roaring, key element of reelection, Hong Kong looking exciting, might want to travel there. Big hopes for the Nationals this season in baseball. All kinds of useful notes that, you know, from this other world we were living in back then.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, now you can understand why Marty McFly bought the Sports Almanac and Back to the Future too. I mean, you can't predict this stuff, so unless you can get a DeLorean somehow, there's not going to be a lot of way to figure out what's going to happen next. But let's talk about what is happening, at least today. No good martinis, as I mentioned, but let's start with the bad. And we'll get to explaining exactly why this is bad in just a moment. But Jim Mattis has spoken out. General Mattis. Mad Dog Mattis. And did you know, Jim, that Trump gave him that nickname? He didn't have it for years before that. But Mattis
on Twitter.
Mattis is speaking out. He's appalled by Trump's handling of the protests in Washington, D.C. This is in The Atlantic. A few different paragraphs from his statement here. He starts out by saying, I have watched this week's unfolding events, angry and appalled. The words equal justice under law are carved in the pediment of the United States Supreme Court. This is precisely what protesters are rightly demanding. It is a wholesome and unifying demand, one that all of us should be able to get behind. We must not be distracted by a small number of lawbreakers. The protests are defined by tens of thousands of people of conscience who are insisting that we live up to our values as a people, and our values as a nation. When I joined the military some 50 years ago, I swore an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Never did I dream that troops taking that same oath would be ordered under any circumstance to violate the constitutional rights of their fellow citizens, much less to provide a bizarre photo op for the elected commander-in-chief with military leadership standing alongside. And then later on, he says, Donald Trump is the first president in my lifetime who does not try to unite the American people, does not even pretend to try. Instead, he tries to divide us. We are witnessing the consequences of 3 years of this deliberate effort. We are witnessing the consequences of 3 years without mature leadership. We can unite without him, drawing on the strengths inherent in our civil society. This will not be easy, as the past few days have shown, but we owe it to our fellow citizens, to past generations that bled to defend our promise, and to our children. And Jim, obviously, this statement, like so many others in our politics today, is a Rorschach test. Whatever you think of Trump, you either think this is a phenomenal statement. Why didn't you say this sooner if you don't like Trump? If you do like Trump, obviously, it's going to be, look at Mattis trying to pile on here at a difficult time in America, sniping from the cheap seats, on and on and on. Basically, what you think of the statement is what you think of Trump, but you say there's more to this and why this is a bad martini.
Yeah, there are probably some listeners who are asking right now, wait a second, Jim is always fuming about Trump. He's always criticizing the president. You might be wondering why this is the bad martini. Well, let me explain it to you. James Mattis agreed to work for President Trump as Secretary of Defense. I agree with a lot of his assessment. I think the criticism is fair. I think the criticism is accurate. But as it is a written statement to The Atlantic, and you know how much I love them, and apparently some further comments to the editor over there. But I'd really like to see former Secretary of Defense James Mattis do some sort of interview. And preferably with a reporter or someone who is not always a huge fan, because I think this requires follow-up. I think this requires a little bit of challenge to Secretary of Defense Mattis and or former Secretary of Defense. And I say this as a fan of the man. I say this as a guy who thinks he is a fine public servant and certainly is going to go down in history as one of the most beloved military leaders of recent memory. Because who did James Mattis think Donald Trump was back when he agreed to work for him? Can he really say he was that shocked by the kind of man President Trump has been? What did he see then that he didn't see now? Or what does he see now that he didn't see then? Pretty clearly, there were periodic reports of tension between Mattis and Trump. But I guess kind of a fair question is, you know, his letter was pretty, you know, it certainly hinted a lot. A lot of people read between the lines that there was an implied criticism of the president. He certainly didn't say anything crediting the president for any of his decisions or something. But it was kind of, I wonder, look, if you genuinely believe that this president is a menace to the people and a menace to the Constitution, which is pretty much the argument for Mattis, one, don't you have an obligation to come out and say so when you think it? Right? I mean, you know, Mattis served about 2 years, and then he has spent the last year or so in, you know, kind of veiled comments. He has kind of hinted that he disagreed strongly with the president, but he really hasn't been outspoken, and a lot of people are interpreting this as the dam has burst. Well, okay, it's early June 2020. If Mattis has felt this way for a long time, did it serve the country well for him to suppress his opinion and suppress his feelings? Because you can see, it's one thing to say, no, I think the president's making the wrong decision on this policy or that policy. If you believe this president intends to divide us, right? If you believe that he is not a mature leader, you believe he is deliberately trying to exacerbate tensions in this country. Well, that's not just a routine policy disagreement. That's a really big deal. Did Mattis feel this way during the impeachment process? And if he had spoken out during the impeachment process, would some Republican senators have voted differently? Mattis is going to get a lot of credit and hosannas and cheers for this statement, but I think I'd like to see a little more follow-up and a sense of like, okay, Secretary Mattis, what was it now? Was it this Trump going across Lafayette Square to the church? And you know, if that was a straw that broke the camel's back, okay, well, what about all those other straws? If you've tolerated everything right up until that moment, but now you can't, well, I kind of not sure I completely see the logic in that, but it's his life. He can make his own decisions. But also, I think I figure another kind of natural follow-up would be, you know, who will you be voting for in November 2020? Because certainly the implication of this is Joe Biden, although he doesn't say so explicitly. And, you know, those who have read Mattis's autobiography know he had real disagreements with the Obama administration. And I think it's pretty clear that he was not, you know, he didn't say, you know, we offered no leadership and direction. I left my post deeply disturbed. We had shaken our friends' confidence and created vacuums our adversaries would exploit, except for Joe Biden. Joe Biden was okay. No, that part doesn't end there. Right? So does he believe that Biden is the lesser of two evils? Does he believe that Biden is, you know, deeply flawed, but, you know, better than the president? I suppose he probably should say that. But if, you know, for a guy who's, you know, reputation is built on blunt honesty. You and I used to periodically joke about tears in his eyes and his negotiations with the Iraqi leaders, you know.
Yes.
I think that there's been a little bit of a political tone to this and to the way he's managed his disagreements with the president. I think if you are likely, if you sense pending serious disagreements with the president, well, maybe you shouldn't go work for him. And if you do work for him and you find those disagreements being so serious, well, you probably should resign as soon as you no longer feel like you can execute your duties. Perhaps that's the way Mattis sees these things. But then to remain silent this long, it feels like there's a lack of internal consistency and logic to what Mattis has done. So I hope he does this follow-up interview. Maybe his answers would make a lot of sense. We will see. My fear, though, is that he's given this statement to The Atlantic. He's taken a couple questions from Jeffrey Goldberg, and that'll be the end of what we hear from Mattis for this cycle. And I think a little more follow-up and a little more conversation is necessary in this situation.
Jim, other than present company, who would you recommend conduct this interview? Because anyone generally hostile to the president will make it a love fest. Maybe Brett Baer. I mean, who else would you really expect to do a good interview?
Chris Wallace comes to mind. It doesn't even necessarily be someone who, like, people who are critical of the president – can still ask tough questions of Mattis, or at least I'd like to think so. I think anybody who is interested in more than the headline, even James Mattis doesn't approve of the president's actions, because anybody who's been paying attention have sensed that James Mattis has not approved of the president's actions for quite some time. I didn't think Jeffrey Goldberg was going to give a lot of pushback against Mattis and say, why are you doing this now? What changed? Where was this for the last 3.5 years? So anybody who would approach Mattis with that kind of tone, I'd appreciate. You know, Bear stands out, Wallace stands out, maybe Catherine Herridge, you know, any of those former Pentagon correspondents.
I'll tell you what's great, though. It's not NPR, and it's certainly not Catherine Marr, but it's 4Patriots. 4Patriots.com/martini is where you want to go to see all their great deals, including deals right now on the Leafy Greens Hydro Garden Seed Kit, the 4Patriots Bountiful Green Plant Food, Sauna Wrap Therapeutic Blanket, and the Solar Go Fridge with Solar Panel. But the Deluxe 3-Month Survival Food Kits are back. Huge popular demand. More than 200,000 Americans agree this is not only important survival food to have, but it tastes good. 688 total servings per kit, about 8 per day, about 1,500 calories per day. You can stash food away and be confident that when and if a disaster strikes, you and your family will be ready. Go to 4patriots.com/martini to get the deluxe 3-month survival food kit and the peace of mind you deserve. Plus, get free shipping on orders over $97. That's the number 4patriots.com/martini. That's 4patriots.com/martini. All right, Jim, two crazy martinis remain ahead of us here, and I think both of them can fall under the umbrella of you're not allowed to think that. And so we're going to talk first of all about Tom Cotton and the New York Times. The New York Times opinion pages, of course, Jim, are just full of conservative columnists and ideas. And no, that's not the way it is at all. It's mostly liberals. I mean, Brett Stevens and David Brooks pass as the conservatives over there at the New York Times. But they did decide to publish a column by Tom Cotton, a former Army officer. He's also, of course, a senator from Arkansas. And he has been pretty aggressive in trying to do what's necessary to get these protests to stop being violent. And so one of the things he's called for, and it's certainly worth debate, is having active duty troops at the ready in case they are needed beyond the National Guard. And so you got a lot of people worried about that on all sides of the aisle. You know, you got the Posse Comitatus Act of 1878. You're not supposed to use military troops in domestic disturbances, but Tom Cotton thinks it might be necessary in this case. So he writes a column. The New York Times publishes it on their opinion page. People just go nuts, including people who work for the New York Times, who are actually apoplectic about this and now saying, Jim, my favorite thing is that some of their anonymous sources, at least three of them, now say they're no longer going to work for the New York Times because of this decision to print this. So because a contrary opinion ended up on the opinion page, we just can't have that, Jim. We have to cancel.
You know, Greg, for about 3 years now, we've been told that it's never been more important to support the free press, not just to read it, not just to be engaged, but to even more importantly, to, you know, to support it, to subscribe, because if you don't, you know, then the lies win. Democracy dies in darkness, as the Washington Post warns us. Unless, of course, you don't agree with an op-ed page, then you should cancel your subscription. then this doesn't count. Then it's not worth supporting it. Never mind the fact that, like, you can write to the letter of the editor and say, you know, dear editor, you shouldn't have run that op-ed. It's a terrible one. That's speech is meeting speech. If New York Times, staff, even though they want to, you know, still claim that they're, you know, objective and fair and nonpartisan and all that stuff, if they vehemently disagree with that, you know, if the company policy is fine with it, fine. I don't think you know, there's any guesses that most people at the New York Times would disagree with this. By the way, I want to point out that op-ed, I would have no problem running it. I think if I were an editor, I would have asked Cotton if you could add a paragraph clarifying his view on whether the president can and should deploy the National Guard when state and local officials do not want them there. Because that's a real question, right? If, you know, if everybody's in agreement with it, fine. That's what we've seen in plenty of places. That's what happened in George H.W. Bush in California in the LA riots back in 1992. That's almost the easy choice. If everybody's on the same page and says, yes, send in the National Guard, that's fine. Oh, by the way, National Guard has been deployed about 23 different states. I say deployed. They've been told to activate. They may or may not be on the streets, and you don't necessarily have to use the National Guard in a situation where they will be confronting protesters or rioters. You can use them in support roles so that you free up cops to do the actual interaction with looters, rioters, protesters, et cetera. Cotton kind of glides over this. He makes a comment or two about politicians hand-wringing while cities burn. So he certainly kind of implies he would support deploying the military over the objections of mayors and governors. Look, I think we could all agree that if the National Guard is going to have to do something like this, you'd like to have the local cops and the state police, you know, in agreement, working in cooperation with this. So even the editors, the editorial board of National Review said they're not, you know, that's kind of a prerequisite there. And it appears it hasn't happened in these cases. But anyway, Cotton writes this op-ed, and there seems to be this idea that if your op-ed appears on the editorial page of the New York Times, that the newspaper is effectively endorsing it in some way. People went back and checked. Back in the 1930s, the New York Times ran an op-ed by Adolf Hitler. They have run op-eds by Vladimir Putin. They have run heads by all kinds of foreign leaders who are horrible people with lots of blood on their hands. I think the New York Times would be quick to emphasize they do not agree with everything that is said and is not meant to be an endorsement. So if you think there is a really terrible viewpoint that should not flourish, that should not be spread, there are two approaches you can make. You can decide to try to suppress it. You can try to deny it oxygen. Greg, as far as I know, has the New York Times ever run an op-ed by the head of the Flat Earth Society?
I have no idea.
All right. I mean, it is a minority viewpoint in the United States or in the world that is a flat, the world is flat. I believe Tom Friedman subscribes to that. Hot, flat, crowded was his character. So, you know, the world is not round. If you think this is a crazy viewpoint and you don't want it to get more oxygen, so to speak, and you don't want this idea to flourish, you can say, we're not going to run this op-ed on this. Well, first of all, polling generally supports. It indicates that both the general public and, by the way, Democrats believe the National Guard should be called out and or military forces should be called out to stop looting, to stop rioting, to stop violence. Now, you can argue that they're wrong, that those majorities are wrong, but you probably ought to engage it. You probably ought to say, here's why I think that is. Denying that this viewpoint exists is not going to do you much good. So that's the question. What is the purpose of your op-ed page? People might say, hey, you know, I don't see a lot of viewpoints, of liberal viewpoints expressed at National Review. Correct. We're a conservative magazine. Now, how that conservatism get expressed can come out in all kinds of different ways. You can get libertarians, you can get social conservatives, you can get, nationalists, America First, who are quasi-isolationists, you can get interventionists, you can get a wide variety of viewpoints. The idea that, you know, you're going to hear a lot of disagreement and differing views at National Review, but you're not going to see the traditional liberal progressive viewpoint. If the New York Times wants to say, we are a liberal publication, we exist to promote progressive ideas and the liberal agenda, and this is what we're about, and therefore we are not going to ever have, you know, conservative viewpoints on our page. David Brooks, you got to go. Ross Douthat, you got to go. Brett Stevens, you got to go. And I can hear all your listeners saying, come on, they're not that conservative. by New York Times standards, they're like arch-right conservatives. But anyway, you're going to, you know, if they want to say it, fine, then say so. And, you know, conservatives would then hopefully stop complaining. And they would also admit, we are a liberal institution. We are a progressive institution. We exist to help one side of the political spectrum. We are not there to inform people of all the news, whether it's good for our side or bad. But the New York Times doesn't want to do that. And they've decided that they want to, you know, hold on to this. And it's very interesting, you know, very clear, a significant portion of New York Times employees do not believe that their institution should be primarily focused on all the news that's fit to print, which was their slogan for lots of years. They believe their purpose is to only publish viewpoints that they like, and that anything that is one iota to the right of them, it's not merely, you know, disagreeable or reprehensible or something. It is de facto violence that must be stopped. Remember, the slogan of the left these days is very often, my violence is a form of speech, your speech is a form of violence.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
There's more than one episode of this going on right now. Let's move over to the NFL. Drew Brees, of course, is a record-setting quarterback for the New Orleans Saints, Super Bowl champion. I think he has still the most total yards and most total touchdowns, although Tom Brady's not too far behind. Yesterday, Drew Brees did an interview with Dan Roberts from Yahoo. And, of course, this whole issue of police brutality and marching for equality came up. And Dan Roberts asked about, you know, are we going to see more kneeling during the anthem? Probably so. What do you think about that? Here's the entire exchange.
Kaepernick's protests were a few years ago, and obviously they were always about police brutality. And now it's coming back to the fore. And a lot of people expect that we will see players kneeling again, even when the NFL season starts. I'm curious how you think the NFL will and should respond to that. And of course, you're such a leader in the league. What is your responsibility as a leader in times like this for the rest of your teammates and players in the league?
Well, I will never agree with anybody disrespecting the flag of the United States of America or our country. Let me just tell you what I see or what I feel when the national anthem is played and when I look at the flag of the United States. I envision my two grandfathers who fought for this country during World War II, one in the Army and one in the Marine Corps, both risking their lives to protect our country and to try to make our country and this world a better place. So every time I stand with my hand over my heart, looking at that flag and singing the national anthem, that's what I think about. And in many cases, it brings me to tears, thinking about all that has been sacrificed, not just those in the military, but for that matter, those throughout the civil rights movements of the 60s and everyone and all that has been endured by so many people up until this point. And is everything right with our country right now? No, it's not. We still have a long way to go. But I think what you do by standing there and showing respect to the flag with your hand over your heart is it shows unity. It shows that we are all in this together. We can all do better, and then we are all part of the solution.
Jim, you would have thought Drew Brees dressed up like Ralph Northam with the reaction that we saw yesterday. LeBron James, wow, man, is it still surprising at this point? Sure isn't. You literally still don't understand why Cap was kneeling on one knee. Has absolute nothing to do with the disrespect of the flag and our soldiers, men and women who keep our land free. My father-in-law was one of those, men who fought as well for this country. I asked him a question about it and thank him all the time for his commitment. He never found Cap's peaceful protest offensive because he and I both know what's right is right and what's wrong is wrong. God bless you. Doug Baldwin, formerly of the Seahawks. This is perhaps the most over the top. Drew Brees, the reason my children have to live in a world that won't empathize with their pain is because people like you are raising your children to perpetuate the cycle. Drew, you are the problem. Aaron Rodgers had a statement. Three of his teammates had, went out publicly condemning him. Malcolm Jenkins, Alvin Kamara, Michael Thomas, all pretty critical members of the Saints, I would add. And on, cancel Drew Brees. I mean, it was just an avalanche here. And anybody who knows Drew Brees knows what role he played in helping to rebuild New Orleans, not just in terms of morale, because the Saints did really well in the wake of that, but because of how active he was in the community, fundraising, getting involved, regardless of color. I mean, Drew Brees' commitment to the city of New Orleans is legendary, Jim. And now, of course, as a result of all this, perhaps because of the blowback from his own teammates, he's now apologized on Instagram to his friends, teammates, the city of New Orleans, the black community, talks about how he realizes that there needs to be a push for greater equality, and then he asks for forgiveness. And so Drew Brees, I think, showing a strong sensitivity there and trying to make sure that he doesn't become a divisive point, Jim. But I think it's just amazing that a week ago, we were all united in demanding justice for George Floyd here, and now we've gone from you can't stay silent because that's you're part of the problem then, and now you have to speak up, but you have to speak up in a way that agrees with the narrative, and the narrative now, at least part of it is that Colin Kaepernick is a hero, and anything that diverts from that makes you part of the problem, and this is why we can't get much done.
Well, Greg, first of all, let's point out that you and I were way ahead of the curve on this, saying that the Minnesota Vikings should be signing Colin Kaepernick. And we only had the best of intentions. We had no ulterior motives in any way, shape, or form when we said that. If you wonder why some celebrities are just like disappear during times of controversy, this is why. Look, you can disagree with what Drew Brees said. I actually think that, you know, out of all the criticism, I thought LeBron was semi-reasonable, and I like that. God bless you at the end of it. You know, the idea is that you're mistaken. You are not seeing Colin Kaepernick said he was standing for. You're not hearing him correctly. Your perception of what he was trying to do and what he was trying to say is wrong. Well, maybe it was, maybe it wasn't. I think there are a lot of people who you could be kneeling during the national anthem with the absolute best of intentions and for the most noble cause in the world. And some people would still find that disrespectful, inappropriate, not the right time and place. We could rehash that whole argument, or you could just kind of observe that Drew Brees, nothing he's ever done before in his life counted the angry crowd came for them. No one cared what he had done for the city of New Orleans. No one cared what he had done after Hurricane Katrina. No one cared what he had done to help coronavirus patients. None of that mattered, that all of a sudden you are the problem. Right, right. I'm sure Drew Brees is the problem. If you wonder, you know, it's very fascinating that people keep saying, we need a dialogue in this country. We need to have an honest conversation. And then it happens, or it starts, and somebody says, you know, then instantly everyone says, no, you're wrong. And they try to shut him down. And they try to, you know, cancel him, you know, all kind of stuff. You can't say you want the dialogue and then say anyone who disagrees must be punished. those ideas cannot work together. And it'll be interesting to see if there's any lingering controversy with this, if any of the teammates have any lingering bad blood. You'd hope it wouldn't come to that. You'd hope that, you know, people would recognize, okay, Drew Brees has this. Let's also make another observation. Drew Brees has been, you know, there are photos of him with Donald Trump, I think in a luxury box at some event or something. Brees is, you know, Brees is perceived as political, whether or not he wants to be political. That probably is not fair. That probably is not what is intended, but that is the reality of this. So if you're wondering why some people never speak or who will effectively hide and go dark on social media during times like this, it's because these are the potential consequences. These are the terms of the debate. It's not enough to engage. You must engage with precisely the way they want you to, or else you are indeed part of the problem or something. It is a little bit frightening, a little bit of the forced confessions and the cultural revolution over in China and things like that. Struggle sessions and all of that stuff. There's only one other aspect I would throw into this, Greg, and I kind of wonder for anybody else who was out there who was jumping on Drew Brees and saying he's the problem, all that kind of stuff. Greg, do you think any of them, you know, their team lost a game to Drew Brees?
I'm sure they have.
Maybe they were looking. They already had a bit of an axe to grind against this guy to begin with, and now with his comments, he gave him the excuse they were looking for.
Unbelievable. You know, we rag on the Chinese a lot for wasting weeks to tip us off on the coronavirus. Apparently, it took about 8 or 9 months for LeBron James Tung to clear customs over there.
Yeah. Yeah, he found his voice again. Isn't that great? You
know, yeah.
But hey, everybody, it's okay to care about police brutality again. Hong Kong police, do whatever you got to do. But because nothing's going on in Hong Kong these days, right?
No, not at all. Apparently, you don't have to consult any ancient history professors to comment on this particular controversy. So amazing. Jim, I'll be back in the home office tomorrow, I'm pretty sure. So see you then. Have a good day.
All right. Be careful out there, Greg.
Thanks. Jim Garrity, National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus, Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. Please be sure to subscribe to the podcast. Leave us a kind review with 5 stars. Also, get us on those home devices. All you have to say is play 3 Martini Lunch podcast. And most of all, join us on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.